What's happening right now? Sitting, relaxing. What's happening? Where am I? Is the most dominant experience is the mind right now? Are there many thoughts? Is there any emotion that is dominant right now? Is there any physical sensation, pain or pleasure that we have right now? What's the most dominant experience? Where is my awareness? Where am I? And then recognizing that, accepting that, and allowing ourselves to let it go. To let it go and to shift our consciousness, to shift our awareness to our physical body. Feel the meeting points between the body and the chair, or the body and the floor. Feel our hands touching our body. And in general, feeling our body, feeling the different sensations that we have. For a moment, see, well, what are the sensations that are the most dominant sensations right now? And then we bring our attention to the breath. And again, we just pay attention to where we feel the breath right now. Where is the breath? Do we feel the breath in the nostrils or in the abdomen, in the chest? Maybe we don't feel as much. Maybe we feel kind of numbed. Maybe the mind is still thinking and we don't feel the breath. And if we try a bit more, where do we feel the breath? Is it more dominant on the right side or the left side? The upper part of the chest, lower part of the chest? The right nostril, the left nostril? The inhalation or the exhalation? Just checking. Notice how the mind has its own way, how very quickly wants to go away. So our job right now is to just bring it back. The mind goes away. Okay, no problem. It's completely fine. We just notice that it goes away and we bring it back. We bring it back to the breath. And just to make it a bit easier for us to focus, let's bring it back to the breath in the nostrils. Feeling the nostrils, all the focus goes to the nostrils. We feel the air that gets inside the nostrils. A bit warmer air goes outside with exhalation. And the mind will wander again. It might be the same thought, exactly the same thought, and it will wander again. But very sharply, we bring it back to the breath, we bring it back to the nostrils. A thing that really helps in this process is relaxing the jaw. Relaxing the teeth, relaxing the tongue, relaxing the shoulders. Notice the tendency, if there is any, to be hard on ourselves. And if there is, allow ourselves to let go and to have a silly smile. And to make the breath a bit stronger. To be with the breath again. See how the breath is a refuge. It's always there. It can be so healing, so supportive. Even if we need to do it 1,000 times in the next couple of minutes. Bring it back, bring the mind back to the breath, bring the mind back to the nostrils. See if you can tap into even more details, more subtle layers of the breath itself. It might also help with concentration as well. Pay attention to how slow is the breath for a moment. try to be with that in each and every second, to see how, what is the speed, how slow is it. Notice the volume of the sound of the breath as well. How quiet is the breath? Take just a minute for that. Be very present with a quiet breath. Allow yourself to stay with the sound of the ball for a moment. In the same way that you are focusing on the breath, focus on the sound just for 1 minute. See if you can stay present for the whole time that there is a sound. From when it starts all the way to the moment when it finishes. Being completely present without judging, just allowing yourself to hear. Great, everyone. Slowly find your way back to your room, your camera. We take it from there. Okay, any thoughts or questions before we move on to our theme for today? Yeah. strongly, strongly recommend to practice on a daily basis. It's like a few minutes, if you can, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, how much you can, like maybe 30 minutes, 1 hour, 6.5 hours, any amount. It's just like having this time of connection to your body, to the present moment, really important. Then moving the body, and also having this practice, really, really important. Okay, so I thought about this text group that we can practice every time that we meet. We can practice. I'm open to any question or suggestions as well, and also to speak about different points in the journey of a spiritual journey. And different points in the journey, in the spiritual path. And today I thought of talking about the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita, it starts with a battle. It starts in a battlefield. And I thought about it so much, like that the spiritual path in the Bhagavad Gita. For the people who don't know, the Bhagavad Gita is a really great book. It's yoga philosophy book that describes basically the whole spiritual journey and all the different questions that come up in the spiritual journeys are being asked there by Arjuna to Krishna, which is the teacher and the divine. And Krishna explains everything to Arjuna, and actually Arjuna is the spiritual seeker in this book. He's going through a whole transformation and getting into enlightenment with Krishna together. And it starts with a battle. It starts with a war between families, a war between the same families, like the really they were cousins, and they got into situation that the war was inevitable, and they got into a situation where there was no other choice. It's just either having a war or having a war. That's it. It's like they got to a point they have to fight, and there are many questions of why is that? Why the spiritual journey starts with a war? What is this? It's like the spiritual journey is something that's supposed to be peaceful. It's something that's supposed to be spiritual, not something like violent, like a war. But it's actually necessity to go through a kind of a struggle in order to go on the path, on the spiritual path. And along the different points of the path, there are so many different struggles as well. And when I thought about it, I came across as well with some Jewish text that describe something very similar. I wanted to share with you the insights from the Buddhist text, from the Jewish text, maybe in order to understand the Bhagavad Gita even more, to understand this war even more. And the book is called Tanya, and it's a book by the Hasidic movement of Chabad. And they say something really interesting. I'll say a couple of things. First, there is a divine soul and animalistic soul. The divine soul sometimes I'm not multitasking. I get to understand that more and more that every time I think that I am multitasking, I try to prove myself that I am, and then I get disappointed. Again, I prove that. Okay, now it's correct, the Tanya. So each and every one of us, according to this book, has two souls. One of them is animalistic. It's like kind of a survival mode that we have. And it's also, we can say in like the spiritual path, many times in many traditions, we describe as the ego. The part in us that wants instant gratification, that wants like power, that wants money, that wants to survive, that have desires for pleasure and so on. Yeah, so our survival instinct and also our like longing for instant gratification. This is the animalistic soul. It also gives power. By the way, it's like we have to remember that this also gives power to us, to ourselves. Like we cannot really be a human being and to survive and to be successful in life, even in the spiritual path, without the animalistic soul. Because it gives us vitality, it gives us power, it gives us life force. It's our power to wake up in the morning and to do things. And this is also come from the animalistic soul. Yeah, but the animalistic soul is drawn into many times into things that are giving satisfaction right away, not for long-term journey. It's like the animalistic soul is not drawn to meditation. Because in meditation, you don't get right away, oh, this is so fun, this is so easy. The animalistic soul will be attracted more to some, I don't know, ice cream. Yeah. A lot of energy, a lot of pleasure, no much effort. Yeah. And this is also tapping into the pleasure trap. Do you know the pleasure trap? Have you heard about the pleasure trap? Very difficult to resist to that. One second, I'll get to the pleasure trap again in a minute. So the divine soul, which is the other part of the soul, is drawn to the light, is drawn to loving kindness, is drawn to the spiritual journey, is drawn to doing good in this world, is drawn to understand the nature of our reality, the nature of who we are. This is the divine soul. And there is a struggle between these two souls, according to this book. And it's like one is against the other. And many times the animalistic soul is winning. And this is where the pleasure traps get in as well. So it's like if we have ice cream, for example, if you took it as an ice cream, it's summer, huh? It's, for most of you, it's hot in where you stay. So ice cream, what is better than ice cream? And it's like, it's over there, it's rich of calories, it's tasty, and you can have it with no effort whatsoever and get all this pleasure. And the mind will not think twice, the ego will not think twice, it would like it, it wants it, it's almost, we cannot resist it, it's almost impossible to resist that because it's so strong, it's a survival instinct, will go there. It's like they give the example in natural hygiene of a shark, it's like which fish the shark will prefer, the fish that is 2 meters away from the shark or the fish that is 100 meters away from the shark. And of course, it will be the one that is 2 meters away. Why? It doesn't need to lose much energy, get the food right away. this is the pleasure trap. If we have in an ice cream so many calories, we'll prefer that so much more than on lettuce. That we'll get so much more effort to digest that and so much less pleasure. And so this is where in this world today, the animalistic soul is winning big time. Yeah? It's like we spoke about it in the last text group in relation to the hungry ghosts, the realm of the hungry ghosts. In the same way here, it's like we run after things that are actually giving us right away satisfaction and right away pleasure and the most amount of pleasure without us losing energy. This is the pleasure trap. Yeah? And the other soul, the divine soul, is in many times losing the battle because the world is designed today for all these satisfactions and pleasure for the ego and for the animalistic soul. Yeah, everything around us, it's like the attitude of everything is really of getting everything instantly. Yeah, I didn't think about it for a while until I got to realize it took me time. Sometimes I'm very slow in understanding things, so forgive me for that. But that Instagram come from the word instant. Yeah. Instantly, now there is nothing, you don't need to wait. Don't wait. It's like it will, you get it right away into your face in a moment, and you have all the notification that you want in order to get that. And it's not only Instagram, it's everything in our attitude. Even like, think about it, even watching a TV show, binge watching, it's even like now on Netflix, you even have like this category, binge watching. And go and binge. And it's exactly that. It's like they take 10 hours, like 6 hours in front of the Netflix and get all this right into your frontal cortex. Without any effort, get all this entertainment and all this content into your mind and have a brain death, you know? And this is where we are drawn to. And it's so difficult to resist. So difficult to resist. And it's easy to speak about these things, but it's like really working on all of us because it's really working on a point in our soul, an animalistic soul, that we cannot refuse. And the people that provide all these services knows that. And they give it more and more and more. It's like with the television, with the entertainment, with the social media, with the food, with everything that we have around us. So, and they know this mechanism, and we are kind of falling into this trap. And it's going back to what we said before, really being careful of what we consume and like taking things away from us, also some kind of temptations away from us. It's like I know, when I know this thing, sometimes I just like take this thing, which is amazing thing, really. No, honestly, I'm not saying it's just it really mean it. It's a great thing, like smartphone can be a great thing, but it can be a horrible thing as well. It can take us out of the world. It can bring us to become addictive and completely dependent on it. And instead of really using it and enjoying it and enjoying the benefit that it gives us. So sometimes I just like, I turn it off, you know? I turn it off. Like we don't have to be always available. And if I turn it off, I don't tend to look at it so much. If it's on, I look at it every few minutes, you know? You look at it every few minutes and it's like, what is more addictive than that? Like, it's like this is indicating addiction. The fact that we need to check it every few minutes or even less than that, and it's always like beeping and always doing all of these things, means that we are like so attached to that. So just to close it, like to reduce temptations is really, really important. So sometimes we should like to put it on silence mode or to just put it on flight mode Or doing other things like not getting like processed food into our fridge and so on, like reducing all this temptation, because when we get with this temptation, really close to this temptation, it's very difficult to win the battle over there. So anyway, as the book continues, the Tanya, the book Tanya continues, they speak about different situations for human beings. And this is, I'm telling you, basically really my own experience. I got such a relief reading that in the last couple of months, because it gave me such a relief to understand this point. They say that there is like this kind of tzaddik, which means like a kind of, it's almost equivalent to a guru or to, it's someone that is drawn only to good things. A tzaddik has an animalistic soul, but the animalistic soul is not coming into expression so much because the divine soul is completely controlling this person. Yeah, so this person is drawn in only to good things. It doesn't really get into these pleasure traps and so on. It's like kind of one of a kind. And you don't have many people like that, the tzaddik. And then they say, okay, this is one extreme, the tzaddik. It's almost in a level of an angel. Yeah, it's like, doesn't really want to do bad things, always drawn to good things, very positive all the time and so on. You know this kind of people, like Dalai Lama. Think about Dalai Lama. The equivalent in the Buddhist tradition would be a kind of a bodhisattva, a person that is like almost perfect, you know? And it's like have almost no flaws, never think about himself, no egotistic, just thinking about others, just thinking about good things, doing good things, speaking good things, not having any mistakes, like a perfect person. This is one person, one type of a person. Another type of a person, to the other extreme, is someone who is ignorant. Yeah? Someone who is ignorant, someone that is, he doesn't know, he doesn't care. They just do things without thinking about it, and many times doing negative things because they don't realize they do that, or they are drawn to negativity and so on. And for many, many years in the Jewish tradition, the people were drawn to be a tzaddik. Of course, if these are the two options, you either have like to be a perfect human being or to be an ignorant dumb, of course you will prefer to be a tzaddik, you will prefer to be this perfect being. So you have all these forces like to work and try to be this tzaddik. And this book is saying, hey, listen, there is a third kind of a person. So there is this tzaddik, which is like a guru and like a perfect human being. And there is like an ignorant person, the other extreme, very negative, doing bad things, like drawn to negativity. But there is some other creature, a human being, a type of a human being that is called the Benoni in Hebrew. It means the in-betweener. It is in between. It's not the tzaddik. It's not the perfect human being, but it's also not ignorant. He's not ignorant at all. It's actually very smart. He is actually, or she is very, very smart. And first, like for me, and this is like almost like a new hero, a new goal. And the people who read the book is saying, no, now the ambition or the aspiration is not to be a tzaddik, the aspiration is to be a Benoni, the aspiration to be an in-betweener. And I'll explain a bit what in-betweener is in a second. But they just say, I heard that and I had such a relief. I had such a relief because I got a validation that I don't need to be perfect anymore. Yeah, it's like always I wanted to be this tzaddik, I wanted to be this perfect person that have no attraction to bad things, that always do things like from selflessly and being very like perfect, like almost not doing any mistakes and so on and so on. And every time that I had this bar, I had this like kind of aspiration, I always get disappointed with myself that I'm not in this level. And I thought and expected myself to get into this level. And this book, it says, it's not possible for you to be a tzaddik if you are not born as a tzaddik. If you are not born as a bodhisattva, if you were not born as a Dalai Lama, how do you expect yourself to be the Dalai Lama? Yeah? If you are born the Dalai Lama, so you are the Dalai Lama. But if you are born as Kobe, or as Miriam, or as Felix, or as Justin, so you are born as Justin, or as Felix, or as Miriam, or as Kobe. Yeah? So it's like, it's to be like, to run after this perfection is actually putting ourselves into disappointment, because it's not possible. And it's like, and they speak about it in this book, and also it's like it's a matter of reincarnation. And it's also the same in the Tibetan Buddhism as well. It's like there is only one Dalai Lama. Yeah. And when the Dalai Lama will die, they will leave the body, it will reincarnate to another one Dalai Lama. So there is one Bodhisattva in the generation. There is one Tzaddik in one generation. It's like there is no like everyone can be that. It's like you're that, and it's like you came to this world for some reason to share light all the time, and there is no work for you much. It's like you struggle in a very different dimension. It's not like a regular human being. And the fact that they say like you are not born as a bodhisattva, you are not born as a tzaddik, it means that you are. You have another aspiration. You have the aspiration of being a Beinoni. You have an aspiration to be an in-betweener. And what is an in-betweener? An in-betweener is a person that struggles. And this is why it came back from the Bhagavad Gita, the world, the spiritual world that we spoke of. An in-betweener is a person that we speak about three levels, and again, like if you see, it's like almost one-to-one with yoga and Buddhism. Thought, speech, and action. You can see that in the Yoga Sutra, you can see it in the Bhagavad Gita, you can see it in Buddhist text, you can see it in the Tanya, which is a Jewish text. They speak about thoughts, speech, and action. So a person that is a Benoni have an attraction or also to bad things, to negative things, yeah? So it's like if I think about something like negative, and a tzaddik, the bodhisattva, he never think about negative things. He doesn't have these thoughts. It's just like, it's not part of his jargon. It's like he's completely in the good space. But the Benoni, he has the in-betweener, he has the attraction to do negative things, to speak negative things, and to think negative things. What is the beauty about the Benoni? He has this tendency, but he have a struggle with that, and he win. He succeed. Even though he have the attraction to do something negative, to do the something that is positive. Yeah? If you do not do that, if you do not win, then you become ignorant again. Yeah? So the in-betweener is not a mediocre type of a person. It's a winner. He's a winner, or she's a winner, that every time have a situation where, oh, I don't want to practice yoga this morning. Oh my God, it's again the same down-facing dog, the same sun salutations. I don't want to do that, but I do it anyway. This is the type of a person that in the Tanya, in this text, is actually superior of the tzaddik, in a way. Or it brings more satisfaction to the divine, it's more important. This is the role of this person. The role of this person is to win the struggles, not to lose the struggles. That when a struggle comes, to recognize, okay, this is a struggle, but I have in me the animalistic soul and I'm drawn into the negativity, but I also have the divine soul within me and I'm drawn into the positivity as well, and I will do everything that it takes in order to use my divine soul and to do the positive things and not to do the negative things. To think the good things and not to think the negative things. To speak the good things and not to speak the negative things. To really make this effort to win in order to progress in my journey. And this is the teachings that were so relieving. It was so, okay, I'm allowed to feel bad. I'm allowed to be drawn to do not to do the spiritual practice and actually to eat processed food and to do all of this, to look in a certain way at certain people and being very judgmental and so on and so on. It's okay. It's okay that I feel all of these things. It's okay that I think all of these things. It's okay. I'm not perfect. I will never be perfect. But I can struggle with this struggle, one battle after another, and win them. And it gave me so much of a relief. Great, yeah. So Justin is saying in the chat, so the in-betweener is enlightening and in opposed to striving being enlightened. Yes, exactly. It's this process. It's enlightening. It's not enlightened. There is no like getting into a point and saying, yes, I'm there. I'm in the light, I'm spreading light, I am perfect, I don't need to do anything anymore. Yeah? This is the trap for many of us, and for me, for many years, I have to admit that. Many, many years, trying to be this perfect person that have no flaws whatsoever. And all the energy goes there. And it's actually was holding me back all the time from really reaching a good space, because I was frustrated. Why am I not there already? When I will be there? What would it take in order to be there? And here it's saying, no, be in the process. Like Justin is saying, be in the process of doing good. You will have challenges, and all your life you will have challenges. And you need to face with these challenges and do good. And this is your role in this lifetime. Now, the struggle with this is that the struggles are always changing. The struggles will always be different. They will not be the same struggles. Like one, in the beginning, when we start the spiritual path, we'll have one type of a struggle. And then later on in the spiritual path, we'll have different type of struggles. In the beginning, we will have like, oh, we'll have this like struggle. Oh, should I do yoga or shouldn't I do yoga? When I want to say something negative for this person. I want to judge this person. I'm angry at this person. I want to revenge. It's like, have this kind of struggles that comes up. And later on, a more subtle struggles coming up, or where like even to think something negative. And later on, another struggle, which is like even like, where, like what kind of attitude I bring into a room, what kind of energy or do I project. And it's like, it's coming more and more and more subtle. And we are actually getting closer to someone who is a tzaddik, but we still struggle in order to bring that. But and the struggles are all the time changing. It's also something that was really enlightening for me to see. It's like that, yeah, in the beginning you have one type of a struggle, and then after you'll have a different type of a struggle. Me in my age will have one type of a struggle, and Liane in her age will have a different type of struggles, and Kristen in her age will have different type of struggles. It's like different phases in life will bring different struggles, different points along the path, the spiritual path will bring different struggles. And yes, it is a struggle. Yes, we do need to win. And so there is, like, it will not happen because that the, we will not fight and will not struggle and be completely spiritual or be an in-betweener. And the spiritual path inherently holds a struggle because the animalistic soul is very strong. The animalistic strong is the one that actually controls us when we are young. When we are a child, we don't like drawn to the good and like, we are just like, we want to eat, we want to, everything is mine, mine, mine. The ego is in its own fruition. And it's like, this is a time where we are very connected to our animalistic soul. And later on in life, our purpose, speaking about karma in the beginning, about vision and about purpose, our purpose is to connect to the divine soul and to overcome the power that the animalistic soul has. And I probably mentioned that dozens of times already, if not more, the Rabbi Nachman stories, the son of the king and the son of the slave that were swapped. Yeah, you remember? That's like the son of the king and the son of the soul, the son of the king and the son of the slave that were swapped. This is really interesting. This is the title of the book, and this is really interesting title to say. It says so much about the story already. It speaks exactly about the animalistic soul and the divine soul. And it's like they were swapped. There was a midwife that was just, she just wanted to see. She was playful and she wanted to see what will happen. Didn't you have this moment like, oh, if I do that, what will happen? And so she did that. She took this boy and like baby that was the son of the king. She put them in the bed of the son of the slave. She took the slave, she put it in the son. It's like this swap, okay, what will happen? And then they grow up and there is a whole plot and then like things get back to normal and the king become the king and the slave become serving the king. The same way here, it's like in the beginning we start and like the animalistic soul is actually controlling us. And after a while we do all this process and we have this divine soul control. Divine soul is more present and have more power. But it's not coming like, it's not a free meal. It's like, it's we need to do this process in order to win this struggle and to make a whole effort in order to win this struggle. And it's a constant effort and it's interesting and it's like, it's inspiring to keep on doing the journey. And all the time, and to work on ourselves, and to be the best that we can, all the time, in any situation. It's really, really important. It's not just in big things. It's not like in life-changing decisions that we want to be good. It's every moment. Every moment we have the choice. Every moment we have the choice. Do I follow this or follow that? Do I follow my lust? Do I follow my greed? Do I follow my anger? Or do I follow my love? Do I follow my openness and my receptivity and so on and so on? And it's like every action that we do, we can choose. Yeah? It gives us the power. Yes, it is a struggle, but we can choose. When we have the awareness of that, I can choose the like the good choice, the one that can lead me into a better space. Yeah, so this is what I had to say today about these two books. And next time we'll continue speaking this kind of interconnection between the Tanya and the Bhagavad Gita, and go into different chapter in the Gita and bring some quotes from there as well. Any thoughts? We have like 10 more minutes. I have 10 more minutes. Any thoughts or sharing or ideas before we finish? Oh, come on, don't be shy. Or maybe if someone can say if it resonates, it didn't resonate, it made sense, it didn't make sense.
Kobe, I think it made a lot of sense. I always like the awareness piece of it because there's a lot of different discussions going on today on a lot of different topics. And the fact that people are talking about it is a type of awareness. And if anything, if I totally oppose what they're saying or something, I can at least compliment ourselves and say, hey, at least we're thinking about it and we're aware, you know? And I also love the in-betweener thing because we do all strive to be this extreme thing and it's like, it doesn't exist. It's the struggles, I think, that probably build our character, you know, overcoming them.
Yes, yes.
I appreciated the text today for sure.
Beautiful, thank you, Lord. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, and I like this point as well. Yes, Justin.
Yeah, I'm thankful for the text today as well. It was a powerful reminder that being someone who fails is okay, you know, and that the failure is actually a lesson as well. And so when you come up against this failure, or you come up against something that you are afraid of, it's pushing through that thing instead of giving into it. Because, you know, speaking of these three levels that you spoke of, the Sadiq and the Benoni, and we all strive as much as we can to be this enlightened or as enlightened as we can. And when we fail, when we're not able to live up to it, we're hard on ourselves. You said this earlier as well, you know. Today I want to do 3 hours of yoga, and I'm going to do that for the next week. And it doesn't always happen that way. And so when we don't reach the level that we're striving for, we get hard on ourselves and we stop. So being an in-betweener gives me permission to be fallible, to be a human being.
Exactly.
So that's powerful. Thank you. Thank you for today's text. It was beautiful.
Really good to see you.
You too, Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah, Yechezkel, brother, you know this text much better than me. Any thoughts?
I have some difficulties with this text because in Hasidut, you have only one tzaddik, and I feel like this text is maintaining a social order. I prefer another beautiful story. I'm sure you know it, about Rabbi Zusha. He says that when he will die, God won't ask him, why weren't you righteous as Moses? He will ask him, why weren't you righteous as Zusha? It was his name. And I believe that everyone must be himself, must try as much as he can to improve his ways, to be always on the move. like always on a progress, even if one day he's not doing anything, but if you look on the road, you see he's improving all the time. You are talking about the situation in our world now, despair, anxieties, but if you know history and you look back, you know, we are always improving. The world, the universe, humanity is going always in a progress to be better. And it's like inventable, because it's not depend on me or on you or on Putin or which dictator. It's the way of the universe, it's the spirit, it's the of the universe to be always on the move, and it needs like everyone will stop and be like in the story of the flood in the Bible, but everyone will have to be wicked in order to stop this wheel from to turning. That's it. So I believe that even now it's a little bit dark, and we may lose hope, but we are improving all the time. That's
great reminder. Yes, like the nature of the spirit, the nature of the universe is good, and progress is inherent, and I truly believe in that. It's like that we are going into the right direction. There is a force in each and every one of us that is going into that is when it's expressed, going into the light, and the light is much stronger than the darkness. The light is as we mentioned many times, you have like one little candle can make light for miles and miles, just like one little tiny one. And it's like, this is why we need to connect to the positivity, to connect, to understand. It's like, even if it looks like the most horrible thing, and at the end we will get out of it very strong and open. We have to have this faith in us as well, because otherwise we'll go and be so pessimistic about everything that happens in the world, and we'll get to a depression and we'll not be able to get out of it.
I'm not connecting it to faith. It's a reality. You just need to know history.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you, Yechezkel, for sharing.
Very good to see you.
So good to see you, yeah. Anyone else? We have 5 more minutes. Claudia? No. I thought, you know, I can't blame you for trying.
Kobe.
Hey, Terry.
Hi, Kobe. While you were going through that about the in-betweener, and, you know, we struggle and we see this challenge we're trying to accomplish within ourselves, I realize I need to be gentler to people around me because there's judgment when I see them kind of not trying. Like, I expect them to be a little bit more positive, and maybe they complain about the same thing, and I'm like thinking, I'm trying to get them to change the action, but really that's for them. That's not, I can't put that on them. I can't judge them for that. As I have, because I'm going through the same thing, so surely they are too. Even if they haven't heard your description of this, it's life and they're going through that. So it makes me think I need to be more gentler on people, not judge where they're at. So
this is so True, Terry. It's like it's such an important comment because it's like everyone is like having a struggle, you know, and then we need to see that it's like many times we jump into conclusion, and we judge others without even like knowing, like even because it's many times also. I'm not saying you, Terry, but it's like it's a human tendency. Someone will be late for a meeting. Yeah, let's say it's like someone will be late for a meeting. Right away we'll judge. Right away we'll get like, oh, this person always late and he doesn't care or she doesn't know and so on. We get into this kind of a space without even knowing like what's happened to the person, what happened, what led him to this moment and what struggles they have or something like that. And it's just like, it's many times, like even like you said, even the person himself will not be exposed or understand how much they struggle. And because many times we are not allowed to struggle. We are not allowed to show vulnerability and so on and so on. So it's like when we get this kind of understanding, oh, there is so much here, there is a struggle for me, for anyone, then we can look in a much kinder way, both on ourselves and other people around us. And it's so important, especially this time. I think especially this time, we need to be more kind, less judgmental, to see the things like that everyone around us is like in a really huge uncertainty, and it makes all of us a bit of crazy. Yeah. So it's like when we suffer so much, and there is a lot of suffering. There is also the collective suffering right now. And like the collective, you know, we are very much connected to the collective. And we are not separated, even though there is an illusion that we are separated. It's like everything that, the one thing that the coronavirus taught us all is that one person that eats a bat in China or whatever, or however it started, doesn't matter. Let's assume that someone eat a bat and this is how it started. Someone eat a bat in China and the whole economy collapse. It's like, this is, it's related to everyone. Everything is connected. There is an interconnection between each and everything in this universe. You are not separated. Yeah. Outbreak here means outbreak there. And problem here and starvation here will mean a problem over there as well. It's like it's all connected, it's all one. This is what I think like the big, big lessons that we got in this from this virus. So when the whole world is in a crisis and there is so much uncertainty and there is a lot of conflicts and much suffering, we feel that. It's like it's not and it makes all of us a bit crazy and like being a bit more compassionate towards ourselves in this period of time and seeing that others struggle as well, and like being gentle and kind, like Terry said. Thank you for this comment, it's really important now. Last, Olena, something to end the meeting? No? Just try, Olena. Okay, Bridgie? Maybe. Felix?
Well, I read a neat equation this week. And the equation is pain plus resistance equals suffering. And that we are attracted to resisting. And that's what gets in the way and causes pain. You can't avoid that. But how bad it is. I just thought that was interesting to muse on. I'm curious, Kobe, if you have any, or anybody has a thought thought on that.
Yes, beautiful, Christine. It's like the Dalai Lama is saying the pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Yeah. Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And it's exactly this equation that you brought up of having a resistance to the pain, not being able to allow it to come through us and to go out, and just resisting it, we're actually maintaining it. We're actually sustaining the states of suffering and pain. And it's true for now so much. It's like, and also a kind of living either in a denial or suppression in one kind of another or another. So it's a really good point as well, like, to understand. Great. I have to leave. I have a session, and it was such a pleasure. I really enjoyed that. Much love to you all. Much love. See you next week, Monday.